We are approaching the time of year when colleges and universities begin preparing for the graduation day ceremonies. Students who have completed their course of study will walk across the stage to receive their diplomas, that piece of paper that certifies their accomplishments in a particular field of study. Now, a great deal of time and effort are involved in making this a memorable occasion. There are many details and formalities to consider. The individuals in charge make decisions concerning the location of the event, which dignitaries will sit on the platform, and the number of available tickets to issue to each graduate. Parents, siblings, and other family members are so proud of their loved one, and they all want to be part of the celebration. Then there is the matter of who will be the guest speaker. The role of the speaker is not only to congratulate the students, but also to encourage them in their endeavors. Therefore, the question is, who will fill the role of the speaker? It is a coveted spot, and the decision is not taken lightly. Colleges and universities tend to invite people who are well known, individuals who have accomplished and achieved on their own. The invitees may include sports figures, celebrities, comedians, presidents and first ladies, politicians, or CEOs of major corporations. It is a very important time in the life of the students. They have their hopes and their dreams, their desires and aspirations. Nevertheless, there may be a little apprehension and concern, uncertain what the future might bring. Oh yes, they will have that certificate that validates their time of study. But the question is, will they be successful in their line of work? Will they find satisfaction in what they call the real world of experience? Their academic surroundings afforded a degree of comfort and security for a long time. Teachers and professors were there to teach, guide, and direct. The students were among others who were, well, more or less in the same boat they were, trying to make sense out of life, trying to figure out who they are and where they are going. Now, for several years, this had been their safety net, their support system. Yes, the family will always be there for them. However, now the expectation is that they should make it on their own. And their question is, could they? The commencement speaker will assure them that they can succeed and accomplish if they believe in themselves and their desire is strong enough to follow that belief. Now, many times the speakers themselves will use themselves as an example of how this works. They caution it is not really an easy journey, and yet there is much available to the one willing to step out and carve their own path. They point out that there are still books waiting for someone to write them. There is music to be composed, original melodies asking someone to sing them. There are inventions awaiting discovery. There are advancements in science and technology, just asking someone to come along and take them to the next stage of development. The world awaits the fresh views of graduating doctors, lawyers, financial managers, and accountants. The speaker tells the students they can achieve and accomplish on their own because they have the potential to do so. However, it will be up to them to follow their dreams and fulfill their potential. The message on graduation day applies to all of the students, not just to a few. After all, each has dedicated themselves to a particular field of study, with that diploma to prove it. To make it useful, they must now make it practical. They must practice and apply it in their everyday life, outside the classroom. Meaning they must actually do something with the knowledge they have acquired. Yes, in order to fulfill their hopes, dreams, and aspirations, they must now translate them into tangible expression. We may look out on that vast sea of graduates and wonder, what allows one student to succeed and another to fail? What is the determining factor that decides success? Well, I think it has to do with the desire. The thing is this, anything that we wish to accomplish does require discipline, determination, and commitment. Without deep resolve and purpose, we are merely playing on the surface of life, not nearly deep enough for fulfillment. Desire is a quality of the heart, and if we cannot do something with all of our heart, then we are merely dabbling in it, fiddling and puttering our way through, not going deep enough to allow anything to happen. How do we practice something? How do we make it practical? How do we apply it in our everyday life? Well, first we decide the direction of our hopes and our dreams. For instance, not every individual who graduates from the Culinary Institute is a wannabe chef seeking employment at a five-star restaurant. Perhaps the desire is to be an owner or a partner in a local restaurant, providing a welcome spot for neighbors to meet together for a cup of coffee, or to share a meal with family and friends. Perhaps the goal is to be involved in food service, providing nutritional meals for schools, nursing homes, and other venues. When we listen to the desires of the heart, we follow the direction of inner guidance, and we find us where we are to be, fulfilling our potential according to our purpose and reason for being. This applies to all aspects of life. When we follow the desires of the heart, the important thing is to listen. To listen means to release all ideas of what we think should happen. Any concepts or opinions concerning what might work. The ego must stand down. Now, the art of listening requires us to be one with the inner voice, that one that speaks, guides, and directs. To be mindful of its presence is to dwell in it, to abide in it. In this act of waiting, we develop a receptive attitude for the inflow of inspiration. Much like if you were a composer, an artist, or a writer, always keeping your attention within as a listening attitude, almost as a vacuum, waiting for the new melody, the new idea or vision, the new invention, that new discovery to come to you. Therefore, when its time has come, its urge expresses through you, making it practical in a tangible way. This reminds me of a story illustrated in the Zen teachings. We read this very clearly in a book on Zen archery, in which the archer is taught how to hold the bow and the arrow, then to wait until something releases the arrow so that it flies into the heart of the target. In other words, the archer does not aim it, nor does he have the power to hit the center of the target. However, by correctly holding the bow and the arrow and waiting for that inner influence to release the fingers, the arrow darts right into the heart of the target. Do you see what we mean by waiting with a receptive attitude? Waiting for the influence to move. We are practicing its presence, abiding in it, listening with the inner ear. Now, the inner influence is a divine urge. It is of God. When we are receptive to the idea of being an instrument and recognize that what we are practicing is the truth that there is a God of infinite wisdom, infinite life, and infinite love, when we can do this, then in the silence and the stillness, it can manifest itself as us and perform its function through us. Now, please understand that in the practice of truth, we are not using God as a means or a method. We cannot use God. However, by attaining an inner stillness, God or truth can use us. It can manifest through us as a healing, if we have chosen a healing profession, an invention if we are an inventor, as music if we are a composer, a book if we are a writer. God is infinity, and all that is an emanation of God. Now, whether it appears as engineering principles, scientific principles, literary works, or artworks, whatever, it does not matter. It must be an emanation of God. We are merely the instrument through which and as which it is to function on earth. Even if we intelligently accept this as the truth, because of our human nature, we cannot demonstrate it until it comes alive in us, until we have an inner conviction which comes with practice. The demonstration will be in agreement with our degree of practice. Now, in divine science, we talk about practicing the presence and living the truth. I have already discussed the principle of living the truth, which is, it is not us doing anything to truth, but rather allowing truth to use and live us. Those who are new to the teaching may ask, how does one practice the presence, especially if they are not yet convinced there is a presence to practice? Well, my response is, how do we practice anything? For instance, the piano students practice the piano by first familiarizing themselves with the instrument. They may sit down on that piano bench, and then they give their attention to the keys on the keyboard. They notice that some are black, others are white, labeling some as sharps, others as flats. They get the feel of the instrument, placing their fingers on the keys. Next, they consider that sheet of music with its notes and melody. Then they understand there is a principle that governs chords and discords, pitch and tone. They study and they learn the principle that supports and gives value to music. Now, having a general knowledge of the piano, they begin their practice by cooperating with its principle, following its notes, listening for harmony or discord. Practice includes allowing the fingers to play the instrument. Practice leads to realization. And in time, the students discover that the music is actually within themselves, and that the piano is merely the instrument which gives visibility to the invisible. The fingers obey the urge of that divine influence in the same way as the fingers of the archer obey the influence that governs the path of the arrow. All of this listening, waiting, and obeying the divine influence indicates there is a hidden aspect of life. Moreover, to allow it to function in and through us, we must practice its presence. And we do so by dwelling in it, by abiding in it. Now, to dwell in something is to stay in it. Stay in that high place of receptivity, where we are still enough for spirit to lead us. How do we get to that point where we can live and practice what belongs to the hidden side of life? Well, we have read and heard about a spiritual or mystical realm of existence. Today, this way of life is taught under the umbrella labeled New Thought. Religious science, unity, divine science, and various other truth movements generally teach what they call new thought. Now, its connotation has changed over the years. However, for my lesson today, I clarify it as any philosophical system of thinking that differs from the orthodox theology of the churches. I define spiritual or mystical as simply a study into the hidden or inner phases of life not known by the five senses. It is neither abstract nor intellectual, nor is it mental. The hidden realm of life belongs to the heart and the soul. The commencement speakers at that graduation day ceremony will point out that anything worth doing requires discipline, determination, and commitment. And therein lies the problem. Many earnest individuals are busy making a living, raising a family, surrounded by duties and obligations, precluding them from finding a time to devote to systematic study and meditation, or even to meet regularly with others whose hearts respond to the influence of inner guidance. Now, their resolve may be strong. However, they feel that their timing is off. Looking at their current situation, they are a little overwhelmed, convinced that any study of the hidden realm of life would have to wait for a less hectic time. Perhaps in the golden years of human existence, they will then have time to pursue the desires of the heart. Well, let us remember that we are existing on this earth plane, living at this particular time for a reason. There is no delay. Each of us has a mission and the potential to fulfill it right where we are. The work the Master has chosen for us is right in our home, where we are now. In fact, there is no greater schooling in patience, charity, tongue control, watching our thoughts, than in our own home, among those dearest to us. Now, if you can find any greater opportunities elsewhere, opportunities for self-discipline, for doing only what the Master within wants you to do for those he has committed to your care, we wonder where you would find it. We practice right where we find us. Now, some say they want to do greater work. However, you can give God no higher service now, for here, now, is your work. Here is where He has put you to serve and to gain those qualities which you currently do not have, which, when gained, will empower you for that which will then follow naturally as night follows day. We practice the presence of the Master in our present work right where we are today. After all, it is there that your higher self has placed you to learn the lessons you must learn, and where you can best learn what you need to know to gain those soul qualities necessary for the greater service that awaits. My final word is that you not become discouraged if you feel you are failing in practicing the reality of the hidden realm of life. It is not you who fails, but simply the little self, your human mind, or ego, which considers itself separate and apart, trying to hang on to some outdated idea about life and about self. But you see, you, the real self, are of God. It is this presence that you practice and the truth that you live. Let us begin this practice right where we are. Will you join me now in our closing meditation? As we close our worship service, we claim a moment of silence. In the silence, we are in God's presence. There is a place of stillness where the soul may meet its God. The lifted eye of recognition reveals, I am that I am. The quiet time invites us to lay aside our personal thoughts and ambitions, to release all sense of time and space, to sit still and listen. The inner ear, the discerning eye, are open and receptive to that voice of wisdom that resides in the soul of man. Some call it the sound of thunder. Others refer it to the still small voice that soothes and comforts. There is a principle in man, a firm foundation that supports and maintains what God has set in place. As we leave the service this morning, we carry with us the remembrance of this time we spent in God's presence. We relive the feeling of serenity that touched our soul, the peace that went beyond human understanding. And now we know we are not alone. God dwells in the soul of man. Turn within, and you will find Him. Amen. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May He cause His light to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. Turn within and acknowledge Him, so that He may lift your consciousness and give you His peace. Amen. Peace and have a blessed week.